We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular.
Okay. Hello there, and you're very welcome to the RTE Your Politics podcast. Well, so near, yet so far. That is where the fight against COVID-19 now stands, as concerns grow that a third surge is stretching the health service beyond its limits. The government has been trying to set a positive tone around the rollout of the vaccine. Can they get it right? And just how much is at stake politically if they don't? This is what we'll be discussing shortly with Micheál Lehane and Sandra Hurley of the RTE Politics team. Those weeks really when everything else in politics came to a pause as the state began to reckon with some of the ugliest aspects of our past. The Taoiseach's apology on Wednesday was seen as the first step towards righting some of the wrongs that were inflicted on thousands of mothers and their children in mother and baby homes. But survivor groups say there is so much more that needs to be done before the government proves that its actions match its words. Details of a redress scheme to provide financial compensation are being awaited, and the government has promised to bring forward legal changes to give survivors the right to access their records. To discuss this, I'm joined by the Labour Party Senator Ivana Bacsik. Ivana, you're very welcome and thanks for talking to us.
First of all,
on this issue of access to birth records, the last government and the then Minister for Children, Catherine Zappone, tried to do this, but that legislation stalled because it was seen that one person's right to information was blocked by another person's right to privacy. So what's your assessment really on how easily this can be done? Can it be done by a vote in the Oireachtas, or is it something that could run into constitutional difficulties that maybe would require a referendum, as the report suggests?
Well, thank you for inviting me on, Mary. And I think it can be done more easily than previous attorneys general have suggested. I think, unfortunately, what we've seen is rather conservative legal advice being given to governments in the past that has made it very difficult for this legislation to be introduced. But given what we now know, and you know, the report contains an enormous wealth of information and of detail about the experiences of women, of girls, of the children they had in the home, the appalling rate of infant mortality and so on. But I think it does really bring focus to bear on the need to ensure that people will have access to their birth information, that adopted people in particular, adopted out of the homes in many cases, that they should have access to birth information. So that's the legislation, as you say, Mary, that Catherine Zappone, as the previous Children's Minister, thought to introduce. I did work with her from opposition to try and bring forward this legislation, and there's a lot of constructive engagement. But unfortunately, we were stymied constantly or on a continuous basis by this legal advice that the right of the birth mother to privacy should override the right of the adopted person to information. I think that's based on an overly conservative reading of very limited case law in Ireland, one case from the 1990s in which the court did balance these rights. I think we would say that some decades on, given what we now know, and given the enormous extent of European and international law now and information rights, I think that balancing would have to be done differently. The right to information would prevail in any court decision, and that therefore we as legislators should simply bring forward this legislation. And in addition, we have GDPR rights now under EU law to information. So I think with all of that in mind, it is, you know, really overdue now that we would bring forward this legislation. And I'm rather dismayed that Minister Roderick O'Gorman has said it will take until the end of the year to bring it in. I mean, I'm very glad the government are committing to do it, but it is long overdue. And I know from so many people who've contacted me just this week alone, and in previous times as well, who were adopted out of the homes, how anxious and really, really disappointed they are about the ongoing delay in bringing forward this.
Okay, but you've said that this legislation should be robust and adequate. So does it require some time? Is it realistic to expect that it can be done sooner than the current time frame, which is by the end of the year?
Well, I think it can be done sooner because we're not starting from scratch. We have had a lot of work done by previous administrations on this legislation. So I think it would be possible to bring forward the scheme of the bill, in other words, just the outline of the principles, by the end of April. That's the time frame the Minister has given for what actually is in many ways a harder task, which is bringing forward the scheme of a redress the outline of a redress scheme for those women and children who went through the homes. He's given that time frame, which is ambitious, but I think doable. And I think it should be a similar time frame then for the information and tracing legislation. It is important to get it right, of course, but I do think that so much work has gone into this, and we have so much advice and so much opinion and so much drafting already, that I think it should be possible. And again, you know, it's something that people have really been urging for. And I think the commission wording, Mary, is interesting, that they don't say in their, first of all, they recommend this legislation should be brought forward. They say the right to information should prevail. It's a very strong recommendation. And then they say, then they note the Attorney General's advice that it couldn't be done previously. And they say, if necessary, a referendum. So it's hedging it. And it certainly doesn't sound as if they necessarily agree entirely with the Attorney General's view.
Okay. And just on that issue of privacy, should there be any right to privacy at all?
Yes, I mean, I would absolutely agree with the Commission in this view that there should be, that of course some balancing needs to be engaged in, you know, that information rights in any setting are never utterly absolute. But here, the information rights should prevail when we as the legislators are balancing. But we can, I think, and again, I worked with Catherine Capone on this, I think we can find a way to ensure that there is recognition given to the birth mother's privacy right, and by putting in place a process, and the Commission suggests this, a process whereby a birth mother who objects to information being released can go to an in-camera, in other words, a private hearing before a court to raise their objection. I think, you know, I proposed before to Minister Capone that we would have an opt-out situation where those birth mothers who didn't wish information to be provided to adoptees should opt out, but that the presumption should be of a right to information. The problem has been that all along, right up until now, the presumption in Irish law has been that the adoptee has no right to information and that privacy should prevail. And I think we need to just rebalance that.
Okay, and just on the issue of a redress process that was recommended by the Commission, you've proposed that laws should be brought forward to ensure that religious organisations pay their fair share into any such scheme. How would these sort of laws work in practice?
Well, I think there's that we've seen with previous redress schemes, in particular the Residential Institution Redress Board scheme set up to provide redress for survivors of abuse in industrial schools. We've seen how religious orders and religious bodies have wriggled out of their responsibility and haven't paid their fair share. And indeed, where we saw a disgraceful deal being done with former Minister Michael Woods in an outgoing government in 2002. And I should say, Mary, my former life as a barrister, I represented quite a number of survivors before the Redress Board. So I saw it firsthand how the scheme worked. And really, it was a real concern that the religious bodies weren't paying their share. I think we can't see that again. Religious bodies in the first instance should be placed under much greater political pressure than they have been until now to pay up, and I hope they will see it as their moral and ethical duty. If they don't, then I do think we need to look at how we bring forward legislation to require them to do so. It is difficult to frame this legislation, but I think we need to look at other ways in which we have achieved, for example, compulsory purchase through placing the public interest or the common good above the right to property. And I think we'll have to look, if necessary, at how we framed those laws in the past in other situations, and how we can then require religious institutions to pay up in this time. But we know they have lots of that, so I think it should be possible to formulate this law. And I'm looking at it now with Deputy Alan Kelly and with other colleagues in the Labour Party.
Okay, and just on your reading of the report itself, would you agree with Catherine Connolly, the Galway West TD, when she said that the report has drawn incorrect conclusions?
I think there's been some unfortunate language around the report, and I think it's in some ways inevitable because it's such a dense report. There's so much detail in it, 3,000 pages. I'm wading my way through it, and personally, I'm really impressed at the wealth of information, at the sheer level of detail in the body of the report, substantive chapters. I think it's unfortunate that the report itself in its executive summary doesn't adequately reflect the experiences of the women that are expressed through the substance of the bulk of the report. And so I think, you know, that deputies like Catherine, who were very critical of the report, you know, yes, I think it's valid to critique the report language in the executive summary. For example, I would critique their language on forced labour. They don't use that phrase. They don't use the phrase slave labour. But really, that's what... But they're using rather cut and dried language, but actually their findings are very clear that there was forced labour, yeah. There was forced labour. Similarly on forced adoption, they say we don't use that language. But again, if you look at the findings and the experiences expressed through the substantive chapters, it's right there, you know, a system of coerced adoption. So I think a little more time spent digesting the findings and recommendations will give us, I think, a more measured view of the value of this report. And I think the executive summary alone certainly doesn't reflect the real wealth of information and experience that is presented in this report.
Okay, and one of those issues you said, forced adoption, because the report says it's not appropriate to describe what happened as forced adoption. But it does go on to say then, and I quote, that it accepts that the mothers did not have much choice, but this is not the same as forced adoption. I mean, should a lack of choice and being forced to do something not be put in the same category?
Well, that is my view, frankly, that they should have and that it's certainly legally possible to come to make a stronger argument that this was effectively forced adoption. And, you know, I did, in fact, read chapter 32, which is the chapter on adoption specifically. And the language in that, in fact, is much stronger. And it's very clearly indicated there that women were given to understand they had no choice but to give children up for adoption. And the figures themselves, I think it's 97% of children who were declared so-called illegitimate at the time were adopted. So, it was clear that women felt they had no choice, that this was effectively forced adoption. And I think to have said that would have been to give the findings greater clarity and strength. But the findings are there in the body of the report.
Okay, and just lastly, briefly, do you think that question of forced adoption should be investigated further?
Yes, I do. I think that, you know, to be fair to the Commission, it wasn't their remit to investigate the entirety of the scheme or system of adoption that was in place in Ireland. I'll give you one example, Mary, that somebody brought to light with me. She was forced effectively to sign her child for adoption when she was she was 20, and later queried this and was told, oh, well, you were an adult. And she said, I wasn't. Until 1985, the age of majority was 21 in Ireland. But those women, and I looked into it, the Commission have it in chapter 32, in page 46, where they say women under 21, and certainly under 18 also, were their signatures were taken as valid, in spite of the fact that they were children in Irish law at the time.
So, OK, thanks very much, Senator Ivana Bacik. So much more to discuss there, but I'm sure we'll get back to it another date. Thanks for joining us on our podcast today. Bye-bye. And now I'm just going to turn to Sandra Hurley of our political staff. What was the initial reaction around Leinster House to its findings?
I think, you know, people were trying to get to grips with the findings, given that it is so lengthy, as we've just been hearing. And I think the dust is really still settling on it. I think in terms of the government's initial response, that speech given by Micheál Martin on Tuesday to the news conference was maybe pitched quite badly. There was that overemphasis on we, on the all of society aspect. You know, when he was asked to clarify, he did say that the state and the church shouldered a large amount of responsibility, but it seems to have gone down quite badly with survivors who at the time themselves hadn't fully read the report and were kind of struggling to come to terms with exactly what was in it as well. So I think it's going to take everyone quite a bit of time to get through all of it. I suppose also when you look at the government's response that day, they put out, an action plan, which is a slightly cliched language, but, you know, all the actions that they were going to do. But when you dig into it, there's a lot of things that just aren't ready. You know, the burials legislation isn't ready. You spoke there about the tracing legislation. That's not ready, even though that Catherine Zappone legislation was pulled at the end of 2019. And it's been sitting on the children's minister's desk, you know, the new minister's desk since he came to office, and he knew that this was a priority. And I think the challenges now for the government are really in terms of following through on some of the promises that they've made. You know, Gary Gannon today told the Dáil that when you look back at the response after the Magdalens, the McAleese report in 2013, survivors were promised a memorial, they were promised medical cards. And he said, you know, they still haven't got those. And we know the problems with the redress scheme in relation to the Magdalens, that there was a lot of issues about who was allowed to claim. They had to redraw the scheme. The problem for the government is that once they're going to look at the various categories that the commission has recommended should receive redress. Now, the minister has promised that they will examine broader criteria, but the problem politically is that officials start to look at containing the costs, and that is very politically contentious. And I think they're going to have to work very carefully to get that right. There's also that issue. Ivana Bacik spoke about trying to compel religious orders to pay up. That's going to be problematic. So I think there's a lot of difficulty ahead for the government in terms of what the survivors want to see is sort of concrete actions.
Yeah, and in terms of the redress itself, the report left it vague enough. You know, it said the details as to who would receive redress and how they would qualify was a matter for the government. So how far along is the government now in setting that redress process in train?
Well, I think they were ready with their response to say that they're setting up a sort of an interdepartmental group and that they're going to report back by the end of April. So that is quite quick. Mm. And the commission did recommend these various categories, but I think it's where you draw the lines in terms of those categories that's going to be difficult. For example, the commission said that women admitted after 1974 shouldn't qualify for redress because the unmarried mother scheme was in place then. I think that's going to be difficult. And then there's various other categories that they're going to include children who haven't been covered by previous redress schemes. But the job of officials will be to flesh that out and draw the parameters. And I think that's going to be quite difficult. But there does seem to be an aim within government to do it quite quickly and to come back by the end of April, because, you know, money isn't the most important thing, the financial redress maybe for survivors, but it is something concrete that they can count on. And I think that, that they will be, a lot of them would be eager to hear about it.
Mm. Emile Lahan, another big issue for the survivors groups is this, you know, legislation around access to their birth records. Now, it seems the government believes it can avoid a referendum on this. But how confident is it really, or how certain are they that they can realistically get this legislation over the line?
Confident enough they could get legislation through, I suppose, but it's whether it has the powers and the adequate powers there to make this happen. I mean, there is a view too that perhaps it doesn't even require legislation if the will was there to really move forward and to free up the information. Of course, it is fraught, it is difficult, but I thought the comments of Micheál Martin at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party last night were significant when he spoke about it being a human right to get access to your identity. And you feel that will be the tone of the debate when it does come before the Dáil in the form of legislation. Of course, Roderick O'Gorman, the Children's Minister, has said that legislation will be making its way through before the end of the year, will be ready before the end of the year. The opposition saying, well, that really is far too long to wait and that it should be on the legislative programme for this term.
Piers Doherty was saying in the Dáil this morning that this situation around hospitals perhaps should have been avoided, the capacity issue in the hospitals now.
Yes, and I think Sinn Féin have been pushing that there's a lot that was promised by the government in terms of what they were going to do in terms of increasing capacity and having extra beds and staffing those beds. That simply that the government hasn't followed through on that, because they, you know, and that the government knew there would be this was always going to be a problem, that winter, the January, February are always tough months for hospitals, and they're made much worse by what's happening at the moment with the with COVID, and that it should have been anticipated by government. And it seems that it's really crunch time at the moment, and there's some really horrendous death figures being announced every day. And we're hearing awful stories about the challenges that are being faced by medical staff within those hospitals. I think the other thing for the government, obviously, is that everything hinges on the vaccine. I mean, you can't overstate that. And the real challenge for the government is, Leah Radker put it like this, that the only constraint in terms of the rollout of the vaccine should be on about the limits on the supply, and that is controlled by Europe. Everything else is the responsibility of government in terms of the prioritisation, the logistics. We've been hearing issues around the IT system isn't up and running yet, and they're putting it in on kind of pen and paper. And I think they're really vulnerable on that. You know, Jack Lambert, the Mater Hospital consultant, said that, you know, fewer than 50% of their staff have been vaccinated so far because they haven't been given enough of the vaccine. And he's questioning, you know, who's making the decisions. He said there's very little transparency in communication, and that is really where the government is very vulnerable.
Yeah, very vulnerable. And the Taoiseach this morning, Micheál in the Dáil, was, I think, trying to set something of a positive tone, you know, saying that the number of people receiving the vaccine will double from 50,000 this month to 100,000 in February. But there's still a lot of criticism, isn't there, that the rollout has been pretty sluggish. I mean, not just externally, but also within the government, there is a bit of apprehension about this.
Well, yeah, there is, and I suppose typified yesterday by the comments of Mark Shalley, probably that his view more on the extreme end of things when he was talking about an abject failure in the rollout. But someone from the independent ranks, and that word sluggish used by Dr. Cathal Berry today when he was describing the vaccine rollout. So I think there is a view that this isn't happening clearly quick enough, although the number of targets that have been mentioned in the last 24 hours do seem significant, whether it's the 4 million one that's spoken about by the end of September or the 700,000 vaccinations that could take place by the end of March. If all that were to happen, and I suppose the initial evidence perhaps suggests that could be quite challenging, even if Ireland is one of just 40 countries who have started the vaccination, as Tánaiste points out, it still looks like to meet those kind of targets, it will require a big improvement on where things are at the moment. But I suppose interesting too, those comments by the Taoiseach, again at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party, where he talked about June being the point at which government could have room for manoeuvre when it comes to making decisions, saying that the world in June will look much different. And I suppose it's at that point clearly that things may have changed considerably. Equally, you will find people across government who say getting hopes up, getting people's hopes up about the summer perhaps mightn't be the wisest thing to do, that it could be at that point after the summer into early autumn before you have the huge numbers who are vaccinated.
Okay, and getting it right with the vaccine will, of course, save lives, but getting it wrong could have huge political ramifications, couldn't it? It would just shatter faith in the government and in the health system. So just like, how high are the stakes here for the government and for Micheál Martin, you know, when he departs office, how important will this have been for him?
Yeah, it is crucial. And I think as well as that, the next 2 weeks, and the Tánaiste speaking about that today, that even if the overall numbers, COVID-19 case numbers are beginning to come down, and even if, as he was talking about, the fact that yesterday there were more discharges than there were admissions to hospitals, the fact that you still have another fortnight where hospitals are under real pressure, and that brings the government into the kind of scenario that they never wanted to be in, where doctors are having to make potentially decisions around who will receive care. Those kind of things is something that the entire strategy was focused on avoiding at all points since last March. But in the next fortnight, those kind of things could happen. And I suppose that is a real, real political danger. It's a political hazard that they thought not to meet head on all the way through by taking preventative measures. But it seems as a result of whether it is the strain, the new variant, or whether it is the political decisions taken in the lead up to Christmas, that that could be about to happen now. And as well as that, yes, then in the months that follow, just how quickly people get the vaccine will be the key measure of this government and of the Taoiseach in particular.
Okay, and the government has also announced this afternoon that schools for children with special educational needs will open from next Thursday. This was originally, of course, in the plan, then they rode back on it. So this is sort of a U-turn upon a U-turn. It's been handled pretty badly, Sandra, hasn't it?
Yes, I think so. It was really botched when it was announced by the minister. It's just last week, I think, properly announced on Wednesday, and it was gone by Thursday evening. And, you know, the reality is if you don't get the teacher unions on board beforehand and you haven't consulted with them, it's just not going to happen. And they reacted, they were very unhappy with how it all unfolded. The opposition at the time, speaking privately to them, some of them, you know, felt that the minister was well-intentioned. But again, it's that point about the unions that they simply had to be on board. So it's all been welcomed that today that it looks like next week we are going to have this special needs provision. I think the other big thing on the Minister for Education's plate, of course, is the leaving cert. And she was really pushed today in the Dáil to make an early call on this, you know, to admit that there is a question mark over the traditional exam. Sinn Féin and even Fianna Fáil, some of their own TDs and Labour's Éoin Ó'Riordan asking about contingency plans and giving clarity on this. And the minister didn't really want to go there, I think. You know, she is sticking to the line that the exam is going ahead, that she's consulting with everyone. And it seems at the moment that the unions do also want it to go ahead, but there may be others in terms of students and parents who feel that that a call should be made on this pretty quickly, and it shouldn't drag out like it did last year.
So as of yet, little clarity on the leaving certs and the full school reopening. Micheál, when do you think we might hear more on these, or just is the government just keeping its options open at this stage?
Yeah, you can see the frustration, as Sandra was talking about, from the government backbenchers on that. Kieran O'Donnell of Fine Gael and John Lahart of Fianna Fáil both really pressing the minister for some clue, some indication as to when there might be clarity around the leaving cert. And Norma Foley, time and time again, just saying that she's talking to the partners in education and the advisory group to try and plot the best way forward, and not being drawn on anything like whether the government might lean towards a hybrid model, a mixture of predictive grades and the traditional exam, or to plough ahead with the original one. And also on that question of returning to school, the minister only saying that the schools are not unsafe places, that it was all to do with mobility and the huge amount of people that move every morning when schools are in place, and that the review is there at the end of the month, and that hopefully schools are moving towards opening on the 1st of February. I don't think many others in the chamber actually think that's going to happen, though. Éan O'Riordan, the Labour education spokesperson, even saying that it's his view that schools won't open until after the midterm break, or possibly even after St. Patrick's Day. He wasn't corrected, or no one disabused him of that notion when he mentioned it either.
Yeah, and Sandra, the minister didn't really respond to Éan's suggestion there, so can we read anything into that?
Well, I think Éan's comments put total fear into parents everywhere who might have heard them, because that is going to be really difficult if that doesn't happen. I think I would agree with Micheál. You know, politically, people in cabinet, many don't think that schools will definitely reopen on February 1st. There's also that obvious thing that midterm happens around the middle of February, so it might be more realistic to aim for later in February. So we'll have to see what happens there. What the government is sticking to at the moment is that everything will be reviewed on January 30th. They'll have better data, the up-to-date figures. So that's when they're going to make a call on it.
And how much information can we get expect at the end of the month then, in relation to a whole range of measures?
Yeah, I think what they've been saying is when they announced all the sort of enhanced restrictions, and there was sort of an announcement every week, really, for the last 3 weeks, it's been pretty hectic. It seemed that everything would be reviewed on January 30th, which seems to be a Saturday if you look at the calendar. So I'm not sure what they're planning. Are they planning a cabinet there? That's not clear at the moment. But yes, I think everything is up for review. You can certainly see that Leo Varadkar has been saying publicly, repeatedly, that people should expect these restrictions to go on for longer. That has very much been his message, to kind of level with people. Others probably sticking to the mantra that it'll be reviewed at the end of the month, and that it's too early to say right now.
OK, well, there'll be plenty more to discuss on that next week. But for now, thank you for joining us. And thanks to Sandra and Micheál and Senator Ivana Bacsik. And thank you for listening to your Politics podcast. If you enjoyed, please subscribe and leave a review. Until next week, goodbye.